Chapter 3. Fulgrim basked in the adoration of his warriors for a moment longer, before raising his arms for silence. His gaze was beatific, humbling, intoxicating and cruel at the same time. Not one amongst his warriors failed to be cowed by that dread black stare. He circled the towering plinth upon which sat his throne, glancing up at its lofty magnificence as if in faint embarrassment that such a thing was meant for him.
"You have been so patient with me, my sons," said Fulgrim, pausing at the foot of the plinth, "and I have been neglectful."
Hundreds of voices clamoured in denial, but Fulgrim silenced them with his upraised palms and a slyly deprecating smile.
"No, it's true. I have allowed no word of our destination to work its way down to my beloved children, leaving you in darkness. Can you forgive me?"
Once again the Heliopolis was filled with wild cheering, a screaming din of sounds no mortal throat was ever meant to give voice. Warriors threw themselves to their knees, others beat their breasts, and yet more simply screamed with wordless affirmation. Fulgrim accepted their praise and said,
"How you honour me."
Lucius watched Fulgrim as he circled the raised throne, studying his every movement and gesture for some sign that this wondrous individual was someone or something other than he claimed to be. Clad in his battle finery, the Primarch's presence was intoxicating. Not vulgar, not garish, but simply perfect. As though in ascending to the pinnacle of excellence, he had shed the need for any overt displays of his devotion to the Dark Prince's creed. One look into his black eyes was enough to realize his infinite capacity for excess in all its forms. Fulgrim had drunk deep from a well of sensation, and without its continual boon, life was grey and empty, bereft of joy and meaning.
"I bring the wine of victory and the sweet caress of war upon which to gorge yourselves," said Fulgrim. "I bring you the symphony of war, the bliss of ecstasy, and the rapture of a pain-filled death to our enemies. We have travelled far from the Feast of Fire at Istvan, and I have decided that it is time to wet our weapons in the blood of our enemies."
A chorus of shrieking approval greeted Fulgrim's words, and he accepted their love as though it was an unexpected boon and not what he had planned all along. The Primarch waved his slender, almost delicate fingers at the centre of the chamber, and a shimmering hollow sprang to life, a glittering representation of planets in their gravitational dance with a brightly burning star.
"Behold, a system I have designated as the Prismatica Cluster," said Fulgrim, as the hollow zoomed towards the fifth world of the newly named system.
A haze of multicoloured light surrounded the planet like a polar borealis effect, and as the image magnified still further, Lucius saw a world of overlapping bands of deep black and glittering diamond. A number of orbitals followed the rotational axis of the planet, colossal freight handlers and processing stations with docking facilities for bulk carriers. Smudges of iron and steel indicated the presence of several such vessels, and pinpricks of winking lights spread between them were clearly defense platforms.
"It is here I give you opportunity to prove your love for me as warriors of the Emperor's children,"
said Fulgrim, walking through the flickering projection and letting the holographic world bathe his flawless features in reflected starlight.
"The lackeys of the Martian priesthood work this world with their dull engines of construction, grubbing like savages in the soil for crystals to be shipped back to Mars.
Scrolling lines of estimare, yields and tithe tonnage slid around the image of the world in a neuspheric ripple of light, and Lucius took a moment to scan them before becoming bored and concentrating on the glittering reflective surface of the planet itself. Aside from a passing aesthetic appeal, it appeared to hold no real importance or strategic significance. He saw nothing to suggest this world was valuable enough to attract the attention of the Primarch. What was it he was overlooking? What did Fulgrim see that he did not? Perhaps the crystals were a raw material used in some vital manufacturing process. Lucius quickly dismissed the thought as irrelevant. That the Martian priesthood valued them was reason enough to disrupt this imperial operation, but it seemed a wretchedly backwater place to loose the strength of a legion. Fulgrim continued to stare at the gently revolving orb of Prismatica V, as though in serene thrall to the stark beauty of its glittering surface. His lips moved soundlessly, and he smiled at some secret joke or some particularly clever bon mot delivered to an unseen listener with perfect timing. A petty thought occurred to Lucius, but he kept it to himself, knowing it would be unwise to speak it aloud. A similar thought evidently occurred to Eidolon, but the Lord Commander had not the common sense to keep his mouth shut.
"My lord, I do not understand," said Eidolon. "What purpose does this serve?"
Fulgrim rounded on Eidolon, the serenity of his pale features twisting in spiteful fury. He stalked towards Eidolon with murderous bile, and Lucius stepped quickly away, lest he be caught in the hurricane of the Primarch's wrath. Fulgrim lashed out at Eidolon, and the Lord Commander was hurled back like a swatted insect. He crashed down into the rubble left by the demolition of the tiered benches, his breastplate cracked wide and his taut skin spattered with blood.
"You dare to question me?"
snapped Fulgrim, towering over the downed warrior.
"No, my lord, I simply..."
"Worm!" screamed Fulgrim.
"This is my desire, and you question it? I..."
"Quiet!" raged Fulgrim, lifting the terrified Eidolon from the ground by the throat. Lucius felt a vicarious excitement at the sight of Eidolon's humbling. He had seen Fulgrim crush the molten neck of an alien god in a fit of rage, and knew that Eidolon's would present no challenge to his strength. The fear in the Lord Commander's face was very real, and Lucius licked his lips at the thought of what a sublime sensation it must be to feel an emotion so alien to the Adeptus Astartes.
"I am your lord and master, and you insult me like this," said Fulgrim,
his rage transformed into abject misery.
"I deliver a war, and this is how you repay me, with questions and doubt. Is this campaign beneath you? Are you too good to make war at my command? Is that it?" "No," cried Eidolon. I simply desire to know..."
"To know what?" spat Fulgrim, his anguish forgotten and his rage restored.
"Speak, wretch! Out with it!"
Eidolon struggled in Fulgrim's grasp, his face purpling to match the Primarch's armor. He gasped for breath, his genhanced physique no match for the strength of a Primarch. Between snatched breaths, Eidolon said,
"Were we not ordered to Mars? Will this not delay our rendezvous with the War Master's fleets? Horus is my brother, not my master, and I am not his to command,"
snarled Fulgrim, as though Eidolon had voiced the most heinous insult in mentioning the name of Horus Lupercal.
"Who does he think he is to give me orders? I am Fulgrim, the Phoenician, and I am no man's lapdog. If Horus thinks he can simply charge towards Terra like a blood-maddened berserker, then he is a fool. One does not simply advance on the most heavily defended world in the galaxy. Such a target must be taken with finesse. You understand?"
"Yes, my lord,"
hissed Eidolon, but Fulgrim's rage was not yet spent.
"I know you, Eidolon. Don't think I don't,"
said the Primarch, dropping the choking Lord Commander and turning back to the image of the shimmering planet.
"Always quick with a sniping comment. Ever the whispered word in the shadows to undermine my authority."
"You are the worm at the heart of the apple.
And I will have no one who doubts me at my back ready with a knife."
Eidolon sensed the awful threat in Fulgrim's words and dropped to his knees.
"My lord, please,"
he begged.
"I am loyal. I would never betray you."
"Betray me?"
said Fulgrim, whipping around and drawing the glitter-grey blade of the anathema.
You dare give voice to thoughts of betrayal? Here, in this gathering of my most loyal subjects? You are a bigger fool than I thought. No!
Shouted Eidolon, but Lucius knew he was wasting his breath. To his credit, Eidolon saw it too, and reached for his sword as Fulgrim stepped in to deliver the death blow. The quillons of Eidolon's sword had barely parted company with the lip of his scabbard when the anathema cut through his neck and sent his head flying through the air. It landed with a meaty thud on the terrazzo floor and rolled until it finally came to rest against one of the urns of victory wine. The Lord Commander's eyes blinked once, his lips drawn back over his splintered teeth in an expression of horror that made Lucius want to laugh. Fulgrim turned from Eidolon's corpse as it slumped to the ground and retrieved the head he had cut from the Lord Commander's body. Blood ran in a viscous stream from the severed neck, and Fulgrim walked the circumference of the chamber, allowing coagulating droplets to fall in the opened casks of victory wine.
"Drink, my children,"
he said, as though what had just happened was a minor thing.
"Fill your chalices and drink to the great victory I give you. We will make war on Prismatica and show the War Master how this campaign should be waged."
The Emperor's children surged forwards, each eager to be the first to drink the Primarch's gift to them. Still clutching Eidolon's head, Fulgrim ascended the plinth to his throne and spread the golden weave of his cloak behind him before sitting. He looked down on his warriors, his gaze at once indulgent and faintly condescending. Lucius thought back to the way Fulgrim had moved as he drew his sword and cut Eidolon's head from his body. With the eye of a master swordsman, he analysed every movement the Primarch's body had made, his stepped lunge, the turn of his shoulder, and the pivots of the hips as he struck. One movement had flowed into another, as if no other could ever have been possible. The Primarch's flawless body was always in balance. Yet Lucius saw something no one but the greatest living mortal swordsman could ever have seen, and it gave him a delicious thrill of excitement and disappointment. It was an impossible thought, a treasonous thought, but Lucius couldn't help but follow it through to its logical conclusion. "I could beat you," thought Lucius. "If you and I fought right now, I would kill you."